Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first Suspense Magazine Halloween special. No frills, no interviews, just chills. We are going to be reading three stories today, and the first one is going to be My Brother's Keeper by Stephen Lloyd. So here's your time to sit back, relax, hopefully listen to this in the dark, because now 60 minutes of the Halloween special of Suspense Radio starts now. My Brother's Keeper by Stephen Lloyd. Beth looked over the neighborhood. Dead leaves bordered the street. The lawns, parallel in design, gave way to foam headstones, white cotton webs, paper Frankensteins, and Dracula and werewolf were visible in each window. All but the house across the street, its weather-beaten walls had come close to defeat. The porch was splintered and rotten, concealing amid ragweed and crabgrass. Clustering discolored chain-link fence shielded it from the outside world, and ivy vines choked out the east and west wings. Beth's eagerness to visit the boy inside waned as she looked on. Boy didn't kill her, her mother said. Didn't have it in him then. Doesn't have it in him now. Beth glared across the street. Didn't matter what her mother said. Her daughter was dead. Found raped, beaten, and murdered at the grain mill. River rats found her first. Took a whole clip to get them off of her, she overheard an officer say. Beth turned to the old woman. What if I found proof? Suppose I go over there and make them talk. Make them come with the truth. Scare him. Her mother sighed and folded her newspaper in her lap. Honey, you've gone over this. You need to heal. Take it to the Lord. Was the Lord there when they sodomized her, or when he rammed into that glass bottle inside her? Beth Ann, tears welled up in Beth's eyes. I know Jacob did it. Tell me why he'd be digging holes in his backyard then. I watched him roll something in one of them not long ago, too. And girls are still disappearing. Everybody thinks he's perfect, but I know he's guilty. The old woman stared off. Beth stood and began collecting. Put that fake sugar in there. Eat that. A moment later, Beth returned with the coffee. Instead of sitting, she stared at the house. Rats all over. Eating their way inside to find the good stuff. Must have been 30 at the very least. Biggest group of some of them. Still 10. Not a bottle of cider. Her mother blew gently across the lip of the cup, being coiled afloat. Fogged her spectacles. Porch had a license to accuse him of rent that fit to be Beth Ann, all because he grew. She began to rise. Where are you going? Face down in soil cornmeal. Rotten stuff. No clothes on, not a stitch. Inside for a nap, her mother said. For I say something the good Lord will punish me for. I miss her too, Beth. Let it go. Let it go before it ruins the rest of your life. Beth didn't respond. She watched her mother go inside, then sat down, her gaze still locked on the house. Minutes later, she could hear the old woman's quiet snoring from the living room sofa. Beth stood. Her hand rested possessively over the pocket of her blouse. Her mother kept a small, a .25, beneath her mattress for protection. and Beth had collected the weapon when she went inside. Jacob looked out the window into the garden. There, soft, unturned soil rested his latest. Soon his feet would be overgrown with vegetables, but there would be others. He closed his eyes, relishing the image of dancing in his head, seeing damaged and hemorrhaged flesh. He opened his eyes, sipped his iced tea. "I know what you did to Sahara," Beth said. "I know it was you. You're the one who killed my little girl." Her face was unrecognizable. "As big as poodles, they were." Jacob jumped and looked up, startled to see her standing over him. She had come through the back door, and the thought gave him a chill. Had she been looking for something back there? She had tears in her eyes. Jacob, tall and firmly built, blonde bangs dangling over bitter eyes, noticed the woman's hand inside the pocket of her blouse. "I know it was you, and now we can find out for sure. We just didn't need to do a little digging in the back there." "Not think I'd be watching?" "Found you digging in the backyard too," Beth said, stepping forward. "Is that where you buried the new girl? Why don't we get the shovel by the shed and see what's under there?" "She's missing all her upper teeth." "I've done nothing wrong. What will Kirk think when he comes home to find his brother's a murderer?" Even took her eyes. "Who'd do such a thing?" "Nothing we can do, Beth. He passed all pretests. Jacob no longer acclaimed a person of interest." Beth brought out the small handgun. "Come on, Jacob. We're going to the back." But Jacob's hand started out with the woman's reaction to the gun, pressing fingers into the soft pit. Still sitting in the eye contact. He twisted and increased the pressure of his fingers into open. And finally, one slid free and spotted the woman. Stood there, twisting her arm. Fox. She began to stir coiled things her hair, dragged hair. I've sick of glanced at her gray eyes pouring over the junk can back seat. "Glad to have you home, Kirk. Tell your old man I said so, will you?" said the cat. "Tell him to get his ass down to this place. Gotta win my money back. Thanks, Mr. Crawford. I should I'll spot my ass, bud. What's up?" "Right, thank you and goodbye." Paid the fare and pulled his luggage out after him. Kirk stood in the sidewalk, long out the cold day. What's it change? Here's the talk. Instant warm, dank air, dust blanketing the furniture. The young man found it just as he had left it. Never. Kirk enjoyed the older hard rocking chair. Posters went to the wall. "Jacob," Kirk called. "You home?" "Down here," a slight voice drifted through the house. "In the cellar." "Perfect." A toy. When his gaze fell on the seat, Kirk's eyes grabbed lying at his brother's feet, then met his brother's eye. "Damn!" Undressed, Jacob stood over the body. I didn't mean to," he blurted. Spit dribbled down from his stubble chin. "I tried to stop it, but I couldn't. I really tried." "You didn't try hard enough," Kirk stumbled toward shock. "What the hell have you done?" How many girls had Kirk helped bury to conceal his brother's passion? Kirk assumed Jacob's fixation would have ended with leaving him home, but apparently it hadn't. Kirk's leg buckled under the shock. He thought for a moment that he was going to vomit when it passed. He stared at the body. Main concern now was Jacob. What's done is done. You can't change the past. Is that what they say? Do you realize what you've done? Why did it have to be her? Clouds of threat rubbed pain to mind. This won't go away. She saw me in the back room. She asked a question. She heard. Jacob crossed the room. Picked up his pants, pulled them on. I'm tense myself, and I have. No, you're not. We can deal with this. We'll get rid of her. Down again. Kirk remembered Jacob shaking him awake in the middle of the night. Said Sahara had ejected his office one too many times and cut her. Jacob had kicked her. They'd both been taking her out to the grave dump. Kirk pointed out fast that Jacob wasn't dead. Catch up. I don't know what to do, Jacob said now. I do, Kurt pursed his lips. How long till Dad gets home? 5 hours? Go to the shed and then come back down here. What are you going to do? Just do it! Jacob did as he was told. Meanwhile, Kurt bust himself up the stairs to the kitchen, pulled out 2 large pots. He began with tomatoes, onions, peppers, potatoes. He cut them up. Pitched the concoction into the pots until it simmered. He made a mean stew with the bun. In the basement, brother Clark, Kirk ran upstairs and returned a moment later to the carving knife. Here, Kirk said, "Hand. Start the top." He went to work. The deep. So that's how it looks like. Brother Clark, carved inside the burn barrel. When the pup took off the packing plant, Kurt took the water and towel off. Just satisfied that he had not missed anything, he stepped out into the hallway. He found Jacob setting the table. Pot of soup, nothing like he imagined. Right? Jacob didn't have a chance. Boys looked at each other, three foot slam shut. Kirk and Jacob took their seats at the table. They could hear the trickle of water running in the bathroom. Sup, smells delicious! Kirk looked at the bathroom. Sam peered at the throat, shuffled into the smoking plate, and faced half the pot. There's my boy! Where's your mother? That was My Brother's Keeper by Stephen Lloyd. And now, give me about a minute and a half. We're going to go into our next story, which is entitled Always Say Treat by Christopher Nadu. Thank you and welcome back to our next story, Retreat by Christopher Nadeau. It will be dark soon, and the children will return. Rick draws the curtains and locks the doors and turns off all the lights. Perhaps this year they'll overlook his house and move on to someone else to torment. Surely they've grown bored with him by now. How many times can they return and experience the same joy? But who can understand what they call entertainment? He still remembers the days before the children started coming with fondness, but the images are becoming more difficult to summon. The world as remembered is a fading fairy tale. The children have seen to that. Rick gasps at the sound as the doorbell ringing punches a hole through the silence in the house. He tiptoes to the front door and peers through the peephole, relaxing once he knows who's standing out there. He opens the door and raises an eyebrow at the man standing in his doorway, wearing a nervous facial expression. "What do you want?" Rick says. Earl's eyes dance in his head as he leans forward and opens his nearly toothless mouth. "Thought I'd hang out with you tonight." He affects a chuckle that sounds dry and forced. Rick shakes his head. "You know better." Earl blinks and looks him up and down. "Come on, Rick. They're going to be coming soon." Rick suppresses the disgust he feels upon hearing Earl's whiny tone of voice and again shakes his head. "They don't like it when people double up. Remember Mrs. Medivi?" Earl looks away and sighs. She had a house full of people. Rick stares blankly at the older woman and fights the urge to reach out and strangle him with his bare hand. Earl knows full well what the rules are about. Here he's trying to simplify. Rick finds it impossible to feel sorry for anybody. He's in the same situation as him, no matter how pathetic he acts. With a small amount of guilt, Rick finds and the children will knock on Earl's door tonight. "Go home, man," he says. "Keep moving the floor. Christ's sake, turn off all your lights." He watches Earl hang his head and shuffle away back to his house. Rick lingers only long enough to make sure the older man has attended his court before closing his own door and locking it once again. Rick takes a deep, shaky breath and leans against the front door a moment longer, wondering if he did the right thing. The world is not what it once was, but does mean that he has an excuse for stop being compassionate. He walks past the refrigerator and tries without success to avoid looking at the photograph at the door. But the photo of Rachel stares back at him as if an accusation and finds himself unable to leave from the spot. "I tried," he says. "I did try." Her picture doesn't respond, but hears something in his head, the sound of the final scream from the front porch as Rick stood on the other side of the front door. In case the children came for him next. Every part of him screamed. Open that door, throw it open, to run out there with some kind of blunt object and start swinging it like a samurai. His legs and arms wouldn't respond. He remembers standing there with his legs shaking until something struck the door so hard it actually sent him reeling back into the hallway. Then, slowly, he approached the door and forced himself to unlock it. He wasn't there. All that was left was her red flicker. That faithful. "Oh God," Rick goes. "Oh God, oh Jesus." The high-pitched giggling children filled the air, causing him to whirl around until he faced them. He tried not to look. People always said don't look in the direction, but he couldn't help himself. He had to know what these things were and why nobody seemed to be able to stop. They stopped giggling as soon as he stopped looking away. He couldn't quite make them out in the dark. Back at the floodlight, Earl's house. But they seemed to fall in the constant motion, shuffling foot to foot, seeing the whole thing back. "God, God, they must be back," one of the others said to him. What was it about? Rachel did himself, but allow himself to entertain the first notion. These things like to keep in mind. They had chosen the wrong SOB this time. Rick swallowed audibly and forced himself to speak. Where is her body? He felt the lip quiver and sucked it back to his side. This caused great excitement among the children who were giggling. He said,
"We did it, right?"
Rick felt his body tense and his adrenaline pumped so hard his vision became blurry. but the smell was heightened. He wanted to run across the porch and slam it into an cracker, rip them to shreds, but somehow he knew he would never get within more than inches of them. That's why the police and everyone else pretended they didn't exist. Those who had tried to get rid of them paid the price.
Someday we'll give you a nice home too, Ricky, one of them said.
Shut up! Rick yelled. Why are you doing this? One of them stepped forward and cocked his head.
Halloween, silly.
The clock ticked down the minute slowly, as if it were too reluctant to deal with whatever event would transpire later tonight. Rick pierced the curtain covering his picture window, taking notice of his son. Soon it will have disappeared completely. Rick wondered what the people in the other house made for the future. For that matter, he thought the rest of the world. Have the children paid visits with us? Maybe they're... I can't remember the last time the actual child maybe the alternative. He still remembers the days when all those religious groups started protesting Halloween, claiming it was becoming too mainstream and that it was replacing Christmas. They weren't wrong. Any trip through the stores in September on revealed an enormous amount of Halloween paraphernalia, which often lingered after the so-called holiday had ended. That seemed to be when everything started getting weird, at least around here. Trick-or-treat took on a whole new connotation. The world weren't so clearly defined in those days. Rachel never seemed to understand them as she paid for it. How many times had Rick told her to always say treat? Only fools, suicidal, Rick, and fools. Rick stumped still. Half of his talk was truth of obvious. Chris jumped to the set of the dog ears and walked to the hall, shocked. Chris stretched his feet. A heavy sign comes through the phone.
Pardon?
I think, yeah, I am. Rick shakes his head. Why is Earl calling him about this tonight? Can't he wait until tomorrow when the sun is back up? And everyone is pretending there's no such evil creatures? Listen, Earl, Rick begins. I really don't have time. They come to my farm for this big trick, Earl said in a gruff, panic. Rick says to them, are you insane? Don't say that out loud.
I don't care anymore, Rick.
Earl sounds calmer now, more resigned to his chosen fate. Rick sits in the nearest couch and stares at the floor. What made you decide to do this? You did. Rick goes numb. The room draw from him into a tiny, indistinguishable point. He thinks he might faint, but somehow remains conscious. He'd been Earl's last stab at hope, a cry for help that he went unneeded in the face of Rick's selfishness and bitterness. Earl, I didn't mean. Gotta go, Rick. As the call ends with a click, the irony of the last statement isn't lost on him. He always wondered if Rachel decided to stay Rick that day, or if she made a mistake. Was she ready to go? Was life with him so horrible? Rick wipes his tears from his eyes, heads into the kitchen to get some paper towel so he can clean up the coffee spill. He's on his knees scrubbing the stained carpet with tears from him for the first time tonight.
Trick or treat, we say. If you don't have treats for us, we'll never go away.
Rick freezes in mind scrub so soon he figured at his last hour before they showered up.
God, that sounded really close. Are they near his house?
Dropping the paper towel, he slowly gets to his feet and heads up for the picture window, pausing to turn off the living room light as he goes. He peers around the court into the utter darkness. Even Earl's floodlight is turned off, and Rick allows himself the brief hope that his neighbor has come to his senses and change his mind.
Ricky!
No, Rick whispers.
No, not yet. Please, no. We've missed you, Ricky.
Rick shakes his head over and over, unable to stop saying no. He wants back away from the window, but is frozen spot, staring into the icky blackness that now seems to contain a small host of hunched over figures.
Come on out, Ricky,
one of them talks.
Come on out for some treat. Choose somebody else's mind screams. It's not my turn. It's not my... One of them giggles.
Don't worry, Ricky. They haven't come for you yet. Rick stumbles forward, ramming his nose against the wall. He cries out and resumes his surveillance from the window. Where are they headed? Whoever they find, he sincerely hopes they go away, treat, and provide an acceptable offering. Trick or treat, trick or treat, we say. If you don't have treats, we never go away. Rick isn't sure he knows what acceptable offering is, because it's changed year by year, sometimes even by the moment. Children stop digging and mean they post them. Not again. Earl screams with butt curling, worse than teeth hurt before, with tail on threat. Rick pokes from foot to foot. No back action. Not again. Not Earl. Runs to the door and throws it open, screaming, "What do you want from us?" Earl screams. Go back to hell where they belong. Takes a moment to go. All done. But the children, all done. One by one. And that's what he understands what's happening. What's going to keep on happening. Why? What a talk said. Halloween, silly. They're never going to stop pumping. Not everyone has caked in and left it whatever they want. Not him, not us. They can't keep coming until the sun burns good. And he's never been to this kind of dust. "Look in here, Ricky," one of them sings. He watches Joe shuffling down around the corner, no doubt headed for the street to terror. He's out. Oh, great time. Sobbing that forced him to proceed. Because despite what he tells down, and he breathes. That was always the thing I could do. That's our third story by Donald Alan Kurtz called A Funny Thing Happened at Anne's Time. A Funny Thing Happened at Anne Diner by Donald Alan Kurtz. The vampire grabbed tightly at his chest, fighting back the urge to cough. He was both weak and hungry and was too disgusted to do anything about either. He looked over his shoulder, hoping to a god who had disowned him. He was not being followed. There had been trouble in his last town, trouble that carried a badge and a bad attitude, and had the authority to use both. But all that was now behind him, he hoped. He focused his eyes, which were 1,000 times sharper than those of a cat, and spotted a bright red light burning in the distance. The vampire tried to keep from smiling, but he could not help himself. He was heading towards civilization. The swamp was the most logical choice for him to take. If he were to escape the anger of the small-town mob demanding blood, then there had been murders along the entire countryside involving the young, involving great blood loss. Being a stranger in town, he was the logical choice to focus the blame upon. Only one small thing, the vampire was innocent. He hadn't taken a human life in over 25 years. This was the sad work of a mortal. "Keep going, Jonathan," he told himself, slugging his tired legs from the hip-deep swamp water. "Perhaps if you're real good, I'll let you have some coffee." The last he giggled at. What would Bram Stoker think if he knew his vampires could drink anything humans could? That they were not limited to blood as depicted in so many novels, comics, and motion pictures. What would the Irish writer think knowing that his vampire's greatest joy lie in the tiny universe of a bacon cheeseburger? The vampire fought back his urges, moving forward towards the light. Jonathan Curtin was, by all appearances, a healthy-looking man in his mid-30s, with just a subtle stripe of gray running down the right side, nearly tied off into a ponytail. The vampire was a noble German-Polish descent and held about him an air of attention that always seemed to be getting him into trouble. He wore a simple white shirt, which wasn't so white at the moment, black pants, and a pair of dress shoes that he found while searching a back street trash can. All in all, he appeared normal, healthy, and alive. Too bad he hadn't felt the beating of his own heart in over 500 years. He whispered, parting the weeds that towered far above his head. A truck stop lay behind him, flaring a bright red sign which read, "And Dinah." Jonathan caught himself smiling again. It was a bad habit for a vampire to get into. He walked out of the swamp, brushed himself off, and headed across the street towards the truck stop. He didn't mind the fact that he looked like hell. Truck stop people usually minded their own business. Usually. America. It was both modern and rustic. There was still enough of the prairie folk left from the surrounding people to suggest simpler times when one did not have to constantly look over their shoulder towards some advancing unknown horror. A dark green bus stood out from amongst the rest of the iron dinosaurs, resting in the concrete parking lot, a big white star proclaimed in a troop transport. Logical. America, like the rest of the world, was at war. Jonathan could feel his clothes starting to stick to him and made an uncomfortable face, soon realizing that he would be developing a rash. At times like this, he wished he were like the vampire of ancient literature. He wished he were indestructible. He wished he had perfect skin. "I'm going to have to purchase some chamomile lotion," the vampire softly whined, walking towards the diner front entrance. It was perfect. Cool breeze, half moon, no clouds. Jonathan drank it all in. A small group of soldiers, dressed in army green, burst out from the front door singing. They were all drunk and offering up songs of the old. The vampire recognized most of them. He smiled, remembering the days when they were all new songs. Remember that the old considered too risque. Songs that were all so sure would soon corrupt the innocence of their children. He shook his head, silently walking past them. The vampire was too involved with his memories to realize that he had been being watched. The door opened, ringing a bell, suspended by a string. All eyes turned toward the invader. Jonathan closed the door, offering his host a simple, if not subtle, bow. "Grill's getting ready to close, mister." Jonathan's attention turned toward the heavy-set woman, dressed in a bright pink and white, wearing a hairnet and paper hat. She was wiping out a small drinking glass, anticipating his next move. He was thirsty to use a glass of water. He took a seat at the end of the bar nearest to the door. A vampire didn't live long if he could not see the end for a fast exit. "Water," he said, picking up a menu. "You have bacon cheeseburgers?" "Nope," the woman stated, shaking her head. Presumably, this woman was the Anne mentioning the establishment's proclamation. "Got a good chicken fried steak, though, best in these counties." Jonathan mulled the thought over. "Fine, but cook it through." The vampire made a face. "I detest raw food." "Good deal, mister." Anne turned towards the back, placing the glass upon the green counter. "Steak! One cluck in the skillet, burn it to the core." This last comment caused Conklin to bard suck Jonathan Fitch's joke. The vampire closed his eyes, he didn't have to help. At least the part of the vampire's life the writers and makers got right. Vampires were night creatures. Vampires did exist in the twilight of man, but were not weak in the sunlight, nor did they ignite like a flame cake if they did not make it home in time. Jonathan loved the sun. There was nothing finer than the feel of the warm sun upon his cold and dead body. He had paid good money to see Dracula at the local theater and found the film quite hilarious. Were they still all correct? Were the ways to kill a vampire staked through their body? Still, there were some truths to the absurdity. Vampires could not cast reflections in mirrors. They did have superhuman strength, did not grow old or feel the cold reality of sickness, and could be killed through a wooden stake. However, unlike the movies, a fatal blow was enough, not hurt. There was something about the simplicity of wood which kept even a vampire's flesh from healing. If the cut was severe enough, deep enough, a vampire had been known to simply bleed to death, and like the living, the blood was all life. Never had a chicken-fried steak before, Jonathan smiled, drinking his water. Just barely in his line of sight, the vampire noticed the table and soldiers flaring over it. They were all quite young and vicious. He couldn't see the battle and were flashing questions in his direction. Jonathan called down to the water. No, he was not. Hey, you there, a harsh voice came from the table of soldiers. Danny, don't, fellow Talon, got Peter up. Walking towards the stranger. Jonathan did all that he could not to choke. He choked upon the bottom of the empty water glass, hoping above all that the advanced fool was still awesome. It was Danny like was out to town and just celebrating one last time before they all separated into the milestone ahead of them. At least that's what Jonathan was doing. Before he knew it, Jonathan was surrounded by a half moon attack. Although no one was able to stand action, an impromptu leader and representative made that advantage. Vampire took action to the soldier at Dumbo's feet. Young man passed Jonathan. Not a gentleman. Hey pal, how about a drink? And he held his breath for a second, hoping to still go away on his own. Crazy night, he was saying in his breath. The vampire emphasized, soldiers were close, making it possible for the border man to escape it without a fight. Jonathan had a faint call to find the focus. Only concern was his two undead hands playing with the rim of the empty water. Silently, yes, still. Wouldn't respond. Snake up was ready, sir. Jonathan smiled. Danny moved in close to the face down, that of Jonathan's right here. Got a glass of water drinking it. His lack of response was starting to irk the shoulder. Well, vampire smiled at him. Without saying a word, vampire was back, playing with the glass of water. Danny side glanced at his real life, but Ray, a federal part. Especially no fight. The soldier spotted a mug of beer in the bar and walked over to pick it up. There were a few moaning protests to drink it, but not enough to stop what was going to happen. The rest of the soldiers backed away from Jonathan. Like a train wreck, everyone else just washed, not able to move away. Here, boy, have a drink on me! Danny barked, pouring the beer mug out over Jonathan's head. Or should I say, on you? Drunken soldiers erupted in a wave of laughter, as fear cascaded itself down upon Jonathan's head. Try as he might, the vampire knew he was going to miss his dinner. "Now that was funny," one of the soldiers remarked. Jonathan placed a shaky hand around his eyes, rubbing his temples. Although he could not see himself in the mirror, he could feel the blood concentrating in his eyes. He knew that if he were careless, all would see. He knew that his eyes were turning the color of heated blood. A red glow started to his pupils. The vampire could see the reflection of the glow upon the palm of his hand. Time to leave. As the vampire rose from his seat and stood motionless for a few seconds, he could see that Danny had expected a response. The young soldier stood with his fists up, waiting for the telltale blows to start coming. As the fact dawned upon the shoulder that Jonathan was going to do nothing, the soldier laughed. "Aren't you going to do anything, mister? Why are you just staying such a goddamn coward?" With that, Jonathan exited. As the vampire went out the door, he saw Anne start his chicken fried steak. Jonathan softly glanced away, quick sample his new dish. He smelled like I've never seen reaction. Weird, Dan. The vampire didn't in fact escape the moment. Reverting back to the he let out a tired cough, catching breath for a moment. He was curious to know why the boot never got the vampire eye tight. Before a vampire could strike at his victim, there would often be the eyes would glow bright red. Then his invader would back off or find himself the next one served upon the menu. He thanked God that didn't happen. Loneliness, Jonathan huffed to himself. If it wasn't for the loneliness, he'd be the first to be great. As the vampire on the long road, he tried hard to climb back into the subtle darkness of the night. Even now and then, however, the headlights of the passing car brought Jonathan's surroundings back to life. Oh, what fool was this you? Jonathan passed an old rusted street sign which stated, New York City, 93 miles. The vampire started to feel an irritating sting between his eyes. He moaned silently, realized he was developing a rash of all dried up swamp water. He knew he was in for a long, painful walk. Tears started to well up in the vampire's eyes. Whoever thought that people of his kind carried no regret, no mistake, were damn fools. Stop crying, son. Almost as bad as bleeding to death, act of crying. Both the menace of a vampire, his strength, his good will. Both the dead, several shouts were like a vampire. Jonathan slowly turned his head, peering over his shoulder. All exited the diner. Most went back on foot to Harbor. Danny and a few of his friends were lucky enough to have their own car. It was the vampire turned his attention back to the direction he was heading towards New York City. "I can't see me alone." The vampire clenched his fist. He prepared himself. He did not have to look behind him when he heard the tires squeal. He knew that Danny and his rogue group of friends were heading right toward him. The sound of the engine straining her horsepower was like a warning call for the vampire. All his undead life were chased after his own. Jonathan had nothing but attract danger. Danger that usually died. "Lord," the vampire cried. "Just let them pass." Zoomed in closer. The calm of the night was suddenly interrupted by the harsh yellow glare of the advancing headlights. In a desperate act, the front of the vehicle aimed itself right at Jonathan's back. The soldiers inside the car laughed as they intended to strike. Jonathan hit the hood and windshield even before he had a chance to react. Inside the car, James was trying to pick himself up. First, the dusty effect of his conscience. "Hey, Danny," one of the soldiers laughed, pointing towards Jonathan. "It's that weird guy who could take drink from you. Why don't we just run ruin his family plans for the rest of his life?" Danny's eyes glared at Jonathan. "Man, that's just mean," Colton laughed, patting him. "All right, boys, hang on." Danny pushed down hard to help himself. The vampire held on tight, both foot and windshield. No one saw the cow.
Oh, oh. Cow!
Both dead. The cross. Oh, like, so, as far from Damn, Danny, I think you killed the guy. Next time the bastard will answer when someone's talking to him. Danny barked, opening his bottle. Car filled much more with the sound of laughter. Jonathan's eyes began to start to glow a ruby red. This time the vampire attacked. Jonathan did his best to make sure his back stayed off the advanced growth, always dangerous running across a hardened stick or some other object that made out of wood. As it was, his back was cut hard and open to the target. His hands held tightly to the car's bottom, keeping his respect. The vampire carved out the two blocks of glass rubbers that bothered him to his teeth and noticed the color of the sun. Definitely thought knowing that he would have to feed before the night was never intended to see another human again. Well, the moment John or watched the car cutting off in the right direction in New York, being deported. Captain Danny, blood was off the first strike, already there was no turning back. Vampire attention upon the car's spinning drive shaft, made a face, realizing that his next actions were. Whoever it was that had written into this vampire legend that a vampire felt no pain had never been a vampire. Here we go, Jonathan confirmed. Jonathan guided a cut, bloodied upon the drive shaft, grabbing the thing as a baseball bat. He fought with the mechanical thing and forcing his will to stop it from spinning. His nostrils filled with the smell of dripping motor oil battering and smoke.
Stop, you damn bitch!
Vampire shut.
Man, I think the car's dead.
Vampire heard something say. Oh, wow, they can kill me. Jonathan opened his eyes, having to fight a way to slip stream. Left him to him now. Days. As he flexed his voice, I noticed the face and rather comfortable man. Now on to our business, Jonathan said, dropped to the bottom of the car. Vampires had village to keep the time. Let us take tricks to the gallant top of place to place. Perhaps that was my purpose. As simply turned themselves back to get around. Jonathan had wished that damn drive shaft was burning a hole through his pants. His eyes closed, thinking with all his might the hood of the car. Soldiers had been out cold. The effects of both the whiskey and the car stopping caused all the soldiers in the car to stop in early deep. There was no guilt, no care that at least in theory they had run over a fellow human being. This, more than anything, angered Jonathan to no end. His relocation was always the same. There was a certain light headiness. Then his eyes buzzed, and it was also became difficult for him to breathe. Many a time he wished that he could save himself a hard day's work by jumping, but he found that he could do it. Life was in danger. Only under great stress of dread could a vampire trick both time and space, even a vampire as old and experienced as he. In a wisp of a second, Jonathan found himself levitating gently above the back of his hood. With a loud thud, the vampire made a foot to stone.
Time to pay, boys!
Jonathan.
All the
With an angry yell, Jonathan crashed through what was left of the shattered windshield and grabbed Danny by the throat. In his tense state of rage, the vampire could hear He could see his fear, and he could smell the blood, thick, thick, young. "Look into the face, boy," Jonathan yelled, staring to faint, hungry, having not seen blood in over a generation. Vampire snake threw his arm to the trunk of the plow. David had choked up half the past, visible, feeling, but not dead. The young man lost his life, skill, and energy. It did not help, but Jonathan had stood motivated. Too little to sleep. The vampire brought himself close to him, fighting down to the flash. Something stopped. Something got at that. Something noble, pure. Buster, Jonathan, perfect. As Danny hit the ground, his foot snapped. The vampire that was afraid. Luck had run out. Danny looked back. Surprised, Jonathan turned to Danny. Danny lay on the road, but the remaining soldiers were and great to keep the fight apart. Great help Danny. Jonathan boy could venture on to New York City. He tried to escape in the moment, feeling each and every drop of the pit cascaded down his body. One thing, the rain had caused most of the jumping off the hood of the car, the vampire glared terrified eyes at the remaining people. Walked with the driver, spinning down, disappearing. But his actions, there was no law against him having a little fun, or at the very least, an opportunity to play a mind game.
"Shouldn't someone go out and check on Danny?" one of the soldiers asked.
"Danny, she and Chuck, this would never happen." The car began to tilt. "Hey, what's with the car? Doors are jammed. Get the hell out of here." Jonathan could hear the scream of the three soldiers in the car. He could feel their frantic movements trying desperately to save their mayfly existence. The vampire demons held the urine flowing down their legs, all beautifully. The undying creature groaned as he made the car tilt even more. He eyed a deep ravine ahead and envisioned it in its proper resting place for three of Uncle Sam's finest. At least they would not have to face the fatal horrors of war. Back, although quite small, some pumped on. With one fatal thrust of his arm, the vampire had caused the car to slip to the deep hole, floating upon contact with the ground below. He closed his eyes tightly, fighting back the waves of pain, torment, and guilt in doing so well. "Please forgive me," the vampire softly prayed, his eyes looking upon toward dark, thunderous sky, hoping above all long lost hope that God had been listening. The explosion from the car had caused several in the diner to burst outside, calling upon several of the drivers to head toward the accident. Jonathan knew he had to leave, and leave fast. Humans in their limited comprehension of the universe never understand. As if nothing had happened, Jonathan started walking down the road again, reacting every now and then to the unfortunate car continuing explosion. He tried real hard to drive. Soldier. Again, the vampire started to cry. "I have to find a place to sleep," Jonathan stared looking at him. That was a funny thing that happened at Ann's Diner by Donald Allen. Our first story read today was called My Brother by Boy. And then we sat there and we read Always Stay Sweet by Christopher Nadeau. I hope you enjoyed our first annual Suspense Magazine Halloween show. If there's a moral to any story into Halloween, I would have to say, don't piss off the children and give them candy. Don't go into a diner drunk and make fun of someone where you don't know who they are. And whatever you do, always ask for now, but just again, I want to thank you all for joining us, hopefully tonight, listening to this on this Halloween. And we will see you next year for another Halloween special. And, of course, we will see you on our normal night on Tuesday night. So, again, from Suspense Magazine, we want to thank you. Good night, everyone.